Blog Talk Radio.
For the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, and I want to remind everyone listening to the sound of my voice that the Constitution Hour is brought to you and made possible by the wonderful people over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. So if you're not a member, drop by, join up. It just takes a couple of minutes. We won't ask for your mother's maiden name. We won't ask for any money. Join the family. Find out why it's called Patriot Families. And I want to welcome on the line with us a lovely young lady from California, Miss Linda Sills. Miss Linda, how are you tonight? Oh, I'm sorry, that is not Miss Linda Sills, unless she sawed her legs off and is now had an operation. I believe that is Mr. Robert Kaplan.
That is, but I don't...
Sorry about that, Robert. Maybe we can arrange for you to have a black dress and some leotards or something. I don't know.
well, that's what Leonie says, because every time I tell her that I'm not going to make it, she says, we already have our black dresses on to celebrate.
There you go. How are you today, Mr. Robert?
Oh, just I'm listening to all this, you know, what going on, and trying to say who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. You know what?
Well, it's pretty easy to know. It's pretty easy to know who's telling the truth if you're talking about the presidential theater that's being run for the upcoming election for the anointed one for the next 4 years. Anytime you see any of the candidates or their cheerleaders on television and their lips are moving, you can be assured that a lie has been told.
Well, man, it was pretty devastating today. Very devastating. You know, it could go either way. Basically, here in Florida, you know, it's 48 to 47 Obama.
Now, was that, Robert, was that you that had the Obama sign on top of your roof there in Florida?
Now, Ron Golden, you see, you're about as bad as my chiropractor.
Well, I thought maybe you got Leonie up on the roof to put the message up there for Obama to save
you. Well, it's amazing how his images have disappeared. They're no longer to be had on the internet. you know, the new flag. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but they Obama had his own flag, you know, moving forward on how the flag should be read. That are, you know, basically he wants to change the flag too when he gets reelected. This guy, he doesn't hold back, man. This guy just keeps on doing what he does, nonchalantly, no lazy fare, you know. This guy, I never seen a man who breaks so many laws or rules in my lifetime, but this boy.
Well,
as you can tell, I'm pretty well angry.
I know, you know, we've had some conversations in the past, and I've touched on things once or twice. You know, we've talked a little bit about Freemasonry and some other things, and I think that sometimes it's real easy to get bogged down in the whole quote-unquote conspiracy theory end of things. But I think at some point we at least have to have the discussion, and I know Oz and some others may not hold the same opinion. Miss Linda was kind enough to forward me a link. I didn't happen to watch the Olympics. And, you know, I'd caught glimpses of the opening ceremony, but it really just wasn't anything that interested me in any way, shape, or form. And I had come to the conclusion some time ago that, like it or not, it seems to me that the world, whether you believe it's a conspiracy, it's being orchestrated from behind the scenes, or whether you believe it's just a natural occurrence that people are falling into this cycle, it seems to me that there's a very pervasive theme out there of rebuilding Babylon. I mean, that really was, I mean, anyone that knows the story of Babylon from the Bible, you know, they would understand that that was the first New World Order.
Well, you're probably right on that. Believe me, Ron, I can't refute or argue of all the scriptures that you've read. Number one, because I learned it in the two religion classes that I had. Number one. And number two, the moral of the story is everybody's after everybody's money. That's
well,
bottom line.
It's not even, you know, unfortunately, if it were only that simple, if it were only about money, it would be easier to subvert the problem. But,
well,
I'm telling you, I mean, this is simply my humble opinion based on, or let me rephrase that, this is my opinion, okay, not so humble, based on a lot of reading and research and understanding. And one of the things that we have to recognize, whether you believe in God or Christ or the Bible or not, okay, somebody does. And the somebodies that are moving this agenda forward certainly do. And they believe in the original, the creation story. And if we look at history, if we just look at history itself, and we look at the fundamental religions that arose out of ashes, so to speak, we find them all centered in one area of the world, which is the Middle East. Babylon, Samaria, ancient Egypt, and Israel. That is the wellspring of religion, whether it was Judaism or the Egyptians' religion, or the Babylonian system, or the Sumerian system. There was an offshoot that kind of came out of Persia, or Medo-Persia, which was called Zoroastrianism. which is kind of a merging of Christianity and some of the Gnostic ideology, and a little bit of the Egyptian thrown in with it. And it all goes back to the same fundamental principle. It really absolutely does. And the fundamental foundational principle is that in the beginning of creation, in the story of the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve, whether you're were an ancient Egyptian or a Sumerian or a Babylonian or a Jew practicing Judaism, there was actually secret knowledge, wisdom that was gained by Adam and Eve by partaking in the forbidden fruit. And that secret knowledge is what's supposedly passed on through the occult. You know, if you look at the whole rituals through Freemasonry, it is coming to the master mason, Hiram Abiff, and threatening his life if he didn't give up the key or the secret knowledge. And he rebuffed the first suitor and the second one, and then was murdered by the third. And this is a reoccurring theme. Three is very important in the occult. I've touched on this before. If you really do some research into ancient Egypt, and, you know, we're told that the Egyptian pyramids were burial chambers for the pharaohs, for the kings. That's the mainline history that everyone is taught about ancient Egypt. But one of the fundamental problems with that is that no pharaoh, no king has ever been found buried in any of the pyramids. And, of course, they'll use the excuse that, well, tomb robbers came in and robbed those tombs, but yet we have the Valley of the Kings, where we find most of the pharaohs and kings have been found and unearthed their tombs. If you look at the rendering of the Great Pyramid, you'll notice that there are three levels. One is subterranean, and two are above ground in the pyramid. Again, three. So it's a representation of three. Three is a very important number. The triangle, or the pyramid, on its face represents three sides, the three attributes of a triune God, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. The Egyptians were fully aware of that. That was the depiction of God, was the pyramid. And while they believed in many lesser gods or deities, what we might call angels in Christianity, they certainly believed in one creator that created everything. And again, the three pillars. There's three pillars in Freemasonry. We talked about that the other night. Boaz, Yaakov, and the Tree of Life. Everything centers around that Tree of Life. That is what was lost in the garden in exchange for knowledge. And that is what the occult believed, that they're going to gain this knowledge, they will live forever. And they're trying to recreate Babylon. Zion, Israel, figures most prominently in this quest. And if you look around the world, look at the EU, the European Union Parliament building, it is absolutely a rendering of the Tower of Babel. It's incomplete. It's not finished. And it's only one incremental part of building the one world order, the singular government, the one mindset, all of one voice, all of one mind coming together. And the elites believe they rise up to be gods. And it's insanity. Now, like I said, whether you believe in the scripture, the Holy Scripture, the Bible, or not, to these folks doesn't matter, because their agenda is moving forward regardless of what you believe. They certainly believe in it. And because they believe in it, they believe that they're being successful because they're aided by their God, Lucifer, who is the light bearer, the one that enlightens. It's very sick and twisted.
Good.
And I believe that there has been a conspiracy from very long ago to corrupt the Bible, and that corruption came through false doctrine and false teaching. The very same thing, if we know the story of the Bible, the very same thing that brought about Christ coming on the scene. Because what was it that he called the Pharisees and the lawyers, the Sadducees, but a den of vipers, and said they were of their father Satan? That's because they were deceiving people with lies. They weren't practicing God's law. They weren't adhering to it. They were liars. And Christ called them so. And I think we see the very same thing going on now, and it's been going on for a very, very long time. And they have perverted the word in the Bible. They have twisted the story to the point that Christians today are believing that they're waiting on the return of Christ. And I've made this comparison before, that they believe that Christ is going to come back and he's going to destroy their enemies, just like the Jews thought when the Messiah arrived he was going to destroy their enemies, Rome, or who they perceived as their enemies. And it bothers me, because that wrong-headed logic, I think, paralyzes a lot of good people. It keeps them in hope that it's going to occur, and so they remain more idle than they would otherwise be if they understood and believed that that what's in your Bible has already happened, and that all of this stuff that's being purveyed and pursued, this agenda, while it all centers around Lucifer, Lucifer's long dead and gone. He's not in the world influencing people. It's simply our own sin nature that is leading us on into this insanity.
Well, Ron, you know, I have to tell you, I've told this before on the show, I'm so disgruntled with my faith that there's people around me, even in my own faith, who I thought were my friends are not my friends. So, the moral of the story is, the only person that you can really trust is God and yourself.
Yep. Well, I'm going to tell you.
And you know, it's sad. Those are the only two things that people have left in this world right now. So I saw the handwriting on the wall. You know.
Well, Robert, I'm going to give you my quick opinion on that. I believe you can trust in God.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as trusting in yourself, I think that goes back to the old saying about a man being his own attorney has a fool for a client.
I won a couple of cases on my own.
Certainly. I have too, but the danger in that is that we become convinced of our own righteousness, our own correctness, and we begin to get maybe arrogant, and we have to be careful that we recognize that we don't trust in ourselves. We got to trust in God.
Well, let's put it this way: when your hotel neurologist basically tells you that you're quote not useful, and he wouldn't hire you for a position, you know you're done. I know I'm done in this town. I'm done. I basically have succumbed to an early retirement, basically. You know. which really is devastating, because, you know, I know deep down this is really not over for me yet. But people are saying it's over, but deep down I don't believe them. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I'm just going to have to regroup to come up with plan B. Now I got to have a plan B.
Well, and I hope you understand what I'm saying about not trusting in ourselves. I mean, I'm not trying to be a blanket, but at the same time, we really have to be careful what we say out of our mouths. Because we can get fooled. We can fool ourselves into believing it.
Oh yeah, you really can't. Sometimes you really can't trust yourself, because you have to wonder about whether or not are you of sound mind to make the correct decision of what you want to do for the rest of your life. You know, and the way this economy is going, and after hearing the stuff of what, but I don't know if you were on the show Saturday night with Michael Magic, part of Friday and Saturday. I don't know if you heard.
I did catch some of it, but I have heard that presentation previously by Lindsay Williams, and I kind of cut out early. I've got a lot of family here of late, with my daughter having a new baby and a lot going on. But nonetheless, it's absolutely imperative, in my mind at least, that people try to study a little bit and understand what's driving all of this junk. Thanks, Mike.
It's the evil G word. It's greed. It's greed. That's all it is. It's greed. They're just greedy, you know.
Well,
and people, you know,
I think there are a group. A large group of people around the world that are just driven by money. That's all they can
see.
That's
it. That's all it is.
There's no doubt of that.
Yeah, but there's, you know, like the program you watched, American Greed, right? Yeah, about all the common criminals. How? I mean, I was watching this case on American Greed where this plastic surgeon, you know, goes into I think it was Indiana, in a small town, steel factory, small town, and he goes in, and he's a renowned plastic surgeon, and he just makes people have surgery on, because they have sinusitis and deviated septums, and that wasn't the case. He was committing fraud. You know, it's just that's what our government's doing. They're just committing fraud, and they're getting away with it. Simple as that. They're just getting away with it, Ron. And, you know, what's going on with it. You know, Romney has finally submitted his 2011 taxes, okay? And both sides are not satisfied with what he paid. You know, who cares a damn of what people paid on their taxes?
Well, the whole thing. The whole thing with Romney's taxes and all that. See, it's right back to distraction and trying to make it about money, okay? And it's not about money.
It's like watching a ping pong match. It's mind-boggling.
You have to understand that money is simply a mechanism, a tool, a means of control. And they've had control of the money for a very, very, very long time. So today, it's not about money. It's about the finalizing the bringing to fruition the plan, the New World Order, if you will. It's about bringing it all to a cohesive culmination.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm sorry, I thought I lost. Yeah, I mean, they're doing a great job. I mean, I have to hand it to them. I mean, you know, I mean, just health care, the Medicare, and here Romney's side of it all, and here,
well,
you know, yeah, you know,
everything. Everything that's being done right now in our government, with the health care and all of these things, it's to cultivate an idea. It's to cultivate the concept that it is the government and only the government that can provide things like money, jobs, security, health care, well-being. The government is God. That's the message they're creating. And
yeah.
When you have the two sides who are ideologically opposed to one another, allegedly, both preaching they're going to be the ones to save the economy and create jobs, you ought to recognize that something is rotten, because the government, it's not their job to create jobs.
No.
That's
small
not
business.
Why we have a government. The whole
no.
purpose of government
yeah.
is for national defense, and I shudder to even use the word national. It's for a collective defense, a way to organize ourselves against, you know, the Mongol hordes.
Well,
the trouble is, the government is the Mongol horde.
Yeah.
They are the enemy at the gate.
There's a Jewish word for that. It is called Haftanah. And what Haftanah means in Jewish is
screwed.
Is, yeah, basically. I mean, my neurologist, you're basically screwed and you're not useful. Well, thanks a lot, you son of a bitch, you know? So sign my disability papers. Oh, you won't get disability. You know?
Yep. And we actually do now have present in the room and on the line the wonderful Miss Linda Sills from California.
Oh,
how
thank
are you,
you.
Miss
Hi,
Linda?
Guys. Doing well. Hanging out on a beautiful day. We have great weather. We're very fortunate here for that that reason, pretty much that reason alone. When you talked about the government being the God, you've got that's one faction. Then you've got the ones who think they are God, and this is so Plato. This is so.
You mean like the Mormons?
Uh oh. Well, anyway, I promised you guys I talked a little bit in the chat room when Mike came in too about what I experienced yesterday. It was the most bizarre thing, and why I'm shocked at these libtards, I don't know. I guess I'm not expecting people that are supposedly a friend or an acquaintance in a group who are supposed to be quote unquote nonpartisan, you know, all that stuff, to say what they said in this country, but I'm not shocked anymore. So I'm back behind the bar, working my tail off. It's hot and humid. There's no good air conditioning. They had the fan the wrong direction, of course. But we had a good time anyway. So this gal, obviously, you know, just completely to the left. Again, and I mentioned that the only thing I can do is pity this woman and pray for her, because she has permanent cranial rectumitis. I mean, I can't reach her any other way but to pray. That's it. So,
Well, you might. I was going to say you might be able to refer her to that plastic surgeon that Robert was talking about, and she could get a plastectomy. That's where they resect part of the abdomen and put in a plexiglass window so they can see where they're going.
Oh, I know. You're on a roll.
That's too funny. Well, here's the story. So she comes up two or three times. I guess she's drinking the sangria, and it was pretty potent stuff. I didn't taste it, but everybody was sucking it down. So along about her second drink, she asked me if I was working and, you know, where I had worked before and all these things, and I told her. And so she takes one of my business cards, you know, for the phone number purposes and all that stuff. She says, I have a friend at Paula Resort that, you know, might be able to get you in over there. And I said, that's really neat. You know, everything's cool. So as this thing's winding down, she's leaving, right? And she asked me, she looks at me and she says, are you voting for Mitt Romney? And I said, well, I had thought about it, you know, meaning that I certainly wasn't going to vote for zero.
But then I woke up and realized the futility of that. No, anyway.
Yeah, but, and she looks at me and she says, oh, my God, you're not going to believe it. She says, oh, well, then in that case, I could never refer you for a job. And then, so here I am, speechless for a second, and I yelled at her as loud as I could because there was a band playing in the background. And I said, it's because I'm not a communist. I was so angry. And I thought, and I thought about it as I woke up today, and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna do the Christian thing. I'm going to just let it go. I'm not calling her out in public. Not doing nothing. Not a thing. She's got her opinion, but I couldn't believe, you know. But now, of course, I mean, look what's going on. Middle East is on fire. Did you happen to see? I got to send you guys this one too. You know, Terry Kiley and Kevin Grady, they've got all this stuff going on. In fact, Lynn picked it up on Facebook, my friend here in Vista, and she sent it around as well. I'll try to get it to you guys. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was speaking for about 8 to 10 minutes or something on why he thinks all of these wildfires are going on and who's setting them, and he thinks it's Al-Qaeda. It's part of the message that they're sending. So I don't. It's just crazy what's going on.
Oh, I saw. What did I see on the news today? I saw. Iran's president at the United Nations. That was a treat.
Yeah, and then also Hilda Beast. You know, her sinus is. She signed something with UN. I guess it was yesterday or whatever. To try to outlaw speech against Islam, any kind of dissing whatsoever, and she's going to try to push it through Congress. This was on, I can't remember which radio thing I heard it on, but, you know, it's just another infringement, another stab in the back. You know, like you said, the Mongol hordes are the people running this show. It's evil, you know, and I know that I have Christ and I have all that, and it's wonderful because that's all I got left. Oy, it's so, as Robert would say, so mashugana.
Well, you know,
mashugana.
We have seen so many things, and it's so interesting once you actually can read between the lines. In particular, going back to what I was talking about at the top of the show with the occult and the New World Order, the whole ideology. You know, that video and the symbology that was involved in the opening ceremony of the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
When you know what it means, you begin to see it because it's been in your face all along.
Yep.
And, you know, then you start to question, you start to go, well, wait a minute, and you start putting two and two together, and you say, you know, this is, this is too much coincidence. I'm not a real big believer in coincidence. I mean, I guess those things can accidentally happen, but usually it's because someone is trying to emulate or follow some ideology. And just because someone says God doesn't necessarily mean it's the God that you're thinking of.
Yeah, the God of Abraham.
You know, the big G in the Masonic ring, you know, ought to be giving it away there. But that's a whole other. I know we've talked about movies before. I watched over the weekend The Hunger Games. Aside from the really Orwellian depiction, I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Not yet.
You should watch it. You'll be stunned.
Can you get it in Blockbuster? Is it DVD?
I'm pretty sure it's out on DVD. Basically, I'll give you a rundown of the gist of the movie. I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, but it's not like it's a great production and an awesome movie. But the gist of the movie is that there was a great uprising 75 years in the past. From the people that are alive at that time. There was a great uprising, a rebellion, worldwide. And that great uprising created a lot of turmoil and death, a war. And because of that uprising, you know, it really just tore the world apart. And so the world has been divided into 12 districts. And I find that interesting that the use of the number 12. That's a whole other story. I won't digress. And so each year, they select one male and one female from each of the 12 districts to represent their district at the Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games basically is they have this enchanted forest that they control and create in three dimension. And you go out, and it's a gladiatorial game, and the last one alive is the winner.
Oh, God.
And that person gets showered with the elite. They get to join the elite and stay in the city and live the greatest, you know, comfortable life. And their district gets allotted more food and stuff for the year until the next year. It's very bizarre, to say the least, but I can see where it's headed. It's kind of a melding together of all the various theories and, you know, ancient Rome. And I mean, these poor people are just starving to death. They're eating, you know, whatever they can shoot, catch, and kill, rats, squirrels, you know. They're just like non-existent on the earth. There's hardly any wild animals around for them to kill. And so it's pretty crazy. It's a crazy movie. But it's not so far outside of the realm that, you know, this is, I think, you know, the idea, the plan. And I know you have never seen the original Matrix. You have got to. You must.
Okay.
Anyone listening to my voice, if you've never seen that movie, it is a must see. You just got to watch it. If you can get past all the sci-fi window dressing that they put on it and think of it in practical terms of just human nature, it's a tremendous movie. You know, the whole concept of the movie is that reality as you know it isn't real. And your life, or what you believe is your daily life, is just an illusion that's been created for you in your mind. And you are actually all the human beings, everyone you see while you're in the Matrix in your everyday life, they're actually all living in suspended animation, and they're harvesting their body heat for energy. You're nothing but a human resource.
Well, yeah, that's how Maurice Strong looks at us. That's how Hitler looks at us.
All the mosquito class looks at us in that way.
that's the best, That's yeah. the best one you've come up with yet.
We are simply a means to an end. We're a tool. We are, if you want to take it a step further, we are the one world currency, human beings.
It's just disgusting. It's the same garbage that created the hell on earth with Stalin and Mao and the rest of them. I mean, although naturally they understood that power comes mainly from the barrel of a gun, and boy, did they use it. And again, I don't put anything past these people. I don't. Give them one inch, and they will do exactly what those people did to us. I that's what I think. I don't put anything past any of them.
Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So I can be all over the map. but that's okay, because that's who I am. My mind, my thought process is typically scattered, smothered, and covered. So in keeping with the theme of the show, the Constitution Hour, on this very day in 1789, the Judiciary Act of 1789 was passed by Congress and signed by Washington, establishing the Supreme Court of the United States as a tribunal made up of 6 justices who were to serve until death or retirement. That day, Washington nominated John Jay as the Chief Justice. John Rutledge, William Cushing, John Blair, Robert Harrison, and James Wilson as Associate Justices. On September 26th, all 6 of his appointments were confirmed by the Senate. And that's what happened, in this day in history in 1789. Now, I had another article that I wanted to talk about, which has nothing to do with 1789, but I wonder how many of you heard the news story that broke last week that the founder of Chick-fil-A, the owner of Chick-fil-A, their CEO, had capitulated and had agreed not to donate money to organizations that were openly anti-homosexual, and in return, he would be allowed to open a store in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
And I don't know how many people... That story broke, okay? So I want to read you a little follow-up on that. Contrary to reports first made by the gay activist group, the Civil Rights Agenda, TCRA, on Tuesday and later picked up by mainstream media outlets, Chick-fil-A and its charitable giving arm, the Windshape Foundation, did not agree to stop making donations to groups that support the biblical definition of marriage in exchange for being allowed to open a franchise in Chicago. For many months now, Chick-fil-A's corporate giving has been mischaracterized, executives said in today's statement. And while our sincere intent has been to remain out of this political and social debate, events from Chicago this week have once again resulted in questions around our giving. For that reason, we want to provide some context and clarity around who we are, what we believe, and our priorities in relation to corporate giving. A part of our corporate commitment is to be responsible stewards of all that God has entrusted to us. Because of this commitment, Chick-fil-A's giving heritage is focused on programs that will educate youth, strengthen families, and enrich marriages and support communities. We will continue to focus our giving in those areas. Our intent is not to support political or social agendas. As it turns out, the guy in Chicago that was making these unsubstantiated claims was mm-hmm. full of crap, and he lost the battle and had to capitulate, and they didn't flip-flop.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh.
It's amazing what's going on in this world. run, I guess, with the political correctness and with all the things that have happened in the past few years, it really looks to me like this whole thing is driven. Their purpose is to divide us. They really, really, and to me, it's so antithetical to Christ. It really is. You know?
Well, I agree, and think about this, okay? And when we encounter people that disagree with the truth, and they're very adamant,
mm-hmm.
It's okay. Just think about this. Those people who are believing they're rebuilding this Babylon, they want you to hate the other people. They want you to lash out at them. They want you to persecute them. They want you to repay evil
yep.
with evil.
Yep.
And the reason they want you to do that is because it will continue to keep you at odds with one another. It will continue to maintain your adversarial stance.
Right.
And I know it's difficult not to...
It is.
Strike out or lash back at these people. But we have to be, as the scripture says, wise as a serpent and meek as a dove. And that is a very monumentally difficult task.
Yeah, but you know what? Because when I, last night after all everything was said and done and I was saying my prayers, and then I always do that just before I fall asleep. And so... apparently, you know, God had spoken to me in the evening while I was sleeping, because I decided there's not going to be any hateful lashing back at these people that I encountered yesterday, or the lady, I should say.
Yeah, and you know, the lady, I would have looked at her when she asked me that, and I would have said, well, why would I do a thing like that?
Yeah.
And
well,
she would have smiled and walked off, and you might have had an end there, you know. But
yeah.
And we do have Michael from the hot seat left. Michael,
hey,
how you doing?
Good, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well, actually.
Good. So I guess Grandpa Age is working for you.
Well, you know, that's Grandpa number 6, my little Isabella.
Wow.
She is absolutely adorable. I got to have lunch with her and my wife and my youngest daughter and my grandson and my sister-in-law this afternoon, and got to hold little Bella.
Nice.
You know, life couldn't be much better.
Well, in about no more than 3 weeks, I'll be in the same position with 2 new children.
That is just so amazingly awesome.
Yeah, 22
twins.
Days away, maximum.
Twins.
Yep.
Yeah, boy and a girl.
Congratulations.
Thank you very
Yay.
Much.
All right.
Nicholas and Beyonce.
That's pretty awesome.
And Mike, is this your first group of children?
Nope. I have a son 23 and a daughter 21.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Gosh.
Actually, wait a minute. She's going to be 22 next Monday. Yeah, October 1st.
This is Mike's version of a midlife crisis.
No, this is Mike's version of losing his retirement years.
And probably your sanity, but that's okay.
Well, no, Ron, that ship has sailed decades ago, brother. Come on, you know. Sanity and the Mike from the hot seat is an oxymoron. So,
you know, yeah. I think it's so awesome. And I'm privileged, as you are privileged to have children and getting ready to have more. It's such a humbling experience to hold that tiny, helpless, perfect little human being in your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, to my heart, speaks volumes of a glimpse of the perfect love that God has for each of us. You know, love so profound that you and I can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, well, this is true. This is true. And I wanted to, like, kind of continue on Linda's thought. You know, not only, I guess, did you, Linda, take a little unexpected abuse at a fundraiser, It is getting very ugly here on BTR. If you are not doing the Romney dance, you are enemy number one. And it's just getting it's just getting absolutely out of control. I mean, just out and out war. I mean, one example is people are on this 47% comment that Romney made, and you know, all I said was, well, yeah, what he said was right, but maybe he shouldn't have used the word victim. And people started going bananas. But they can't even give quantitative thought. He goes, well, if you think that's going to hurt people that are voting for Romney, well, it's not. But that's not the idea. You need to pull people in who's not voting for you. It doesn't matter what you say to the people already voting for you, but they just don't want to hear that. And then God forbid, you say that, you know, you're going to vote for Gary Johnson and not Mitt Romney. Well, you're giving Obama the election. They're going bananas. And they keep throwing 1992 at me with no statistical analysis. And even when I give it to them, which it took me just 5 minutes to find, these people just don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And they're just going bananas.
Frustrating.
And then last night was like the coup de grace for me, going into other shows. Outside of course, you guys, because, you know, even if, you know, we disagree or not agree, it does get into bedlam. Well, I wanted to point out that this one show was talking about the Constitution and taking it back, all this, which, you know, every show was turning into the Sean Hannity Amateur Hour. And, you know, oh, it's Ron, Linda, Robert, to the point where, why should we even bother listening to other shows? If we want Sean Hannity, let's get the real Sean Hannity, because that's all it's turning into.
Wow.
And I just pointed out about, you know, H.R. 347. People don't even know what that is.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I said to them, you know, how do you think the vote went out? Oh, well, what do you expect? You know, with Obama being president. And I said, well, how do you think it went in the House? Well, it probably went mostly Democrat. And they're not even letting me get a word in. And I'm like, well, why don't you let me tell you? And I said, it practically went unanimously. Outside of three nays. And, of course, one of the three nays was Ron Paul.
Dr.
I mean, you
Nettle
could,
himself?
I mean, yeah. I mean,
yep.
You know, see, with guys like Ron Paul, you know, you don't even have to look. You know it's there. And people just start going nuts. It's just absolutely bedlam. And then the last show that I was just listening in on, you know, all the GOP folks were getting all upset how the Democrats were railing on Ann Romney, and rightfully so. I'm not even going to get into the language of the chat room about what they were saying about Michelle Obama's private parts. I mean, I just left the show. I was out of here. I mean, I think it's broken down on both sides, and it's obviously fear. It's less than 6 weeks away, but it's just, my God, you become enemy number one with these people.
You know,
that's the whole point.
Yeah, and what's sad is when you talk about the language, there's no need for that. I mean, that's just, there's no need to get down into the dirt that deep.
No, it's beyond the pale. But, you know, it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier. It, you know, that's by design. They want you to be at each other's throats. It produces the outcome they desire.
They want.
Go ahead, Robert.
Go ahead, Mike. But you know, Mike touched on a good point because, you know, I was listening to the news all day long today, you know, and then hearing about, you know, our embassies in the Middle East are not being protected. And again, without further ado, Ron had it right with Ron Paul because Ron Paul said, he said, get him out. Get him out when you got a chance. He said that a long time ago, and they looked at him and thought he was a nut. You know, and the reason why I put it for Ron Paul, I tell you why. You know, people thought he was crazy. Now, I thought he was crazy. But then when I kept on listening to him, he began to make sense. He formulated the whole problem in the Middle East in a nutshell, you know, and he's the only one that got it right. He's the only one that got it right. He's the only one that got it right. I don't care what anybody else says. He should have been our nominee.
I'm sorry, Robert. You go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, I just wanted to bring shed light to everybody. You know, I'm Jewish, and what Obama said today. Let me see what I remember the quote from him, and I'll give it to you, Mike. He said, Israel is one of our best allies. One of our best allies in the Middle East. One of our best allies. To that effect. So there's
the
another
best money
ally.
Can buy.
Okay. Well, who do you think the other ally is? That's what I want to know.
Oh, it's probably Egypt or Iran. You know, I want to read you guys. I want to read something to you guys because I want to pose this as a question to everybody listening. This is something that I heard a legislator ask at a state committee meeting in regards to our state constitution. So, since we're talking about our foreign policy in part, I want to put things into perspective. So. It says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Ladies and gentlemen, what I want to pose to you is understanding that the purpose of our federal government are those aforementioned things. What portion of our foreign policy currently in the Middle East achieves one of those goals? What one of those goals does it achieve, and how does it actually go about achieving it? Can we say with all sincerity that our foreign policy since 1948, and we'll just limit it to just the Middle East right now, can we honestly say that our foreign policy in the Middle East since 1948 is providing for our common defense?
No.
Of course not.
No.
I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Right. I mean, we can look at it pragmatically and say, well, gee, let's see. We had the hostage crisis in 79. We had the whole thing in Libya. We had the whole thing with the Marine barracks in Lebanon. We've had a fiasco in our soldiers being killed and murdered in Iraq and Afghanistan. We had 9/11. So is that really, providing a common defense? I would say no. Is it securing the blessings of liberty? You know, what are the reasonings behind the USA Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, and a whole litany of other bills and acts, laws that have been passed that restrain and restrict our liberties, if not our foreign policy in the Middle East?
See, Ron, this is why I'm going to need you Friday night.
See, it doesn't do any of these
things.
You
were just so technical. Like, I don't have all of that. So
but, I mean, it's what Thomas Jefferson wrote about our rights. It is self-evident that our policy, no matter how well-intentioned we might believe it is, I don't personally believe it is well-intentioned, but that's another story. No matter how well-intentioned we might want to believe it is, at some point, ladies and gentlemen, we have to admit that it is an abject failure. We cannot keep whistling past the graveyard and say, well, you know, since we've got the Patriot Act, we haven't had another 9/11. Well, we hadn't had a damn 9/11 up until we had 9/11. So that's a specious argument.
And we're not going to have one again because mission accomplished.
Correct.
Yep.
And I want to get back to this thing about voting. Because I know you guys know how I feel about this, and there has got to be a way for me to formulate the statement where it just makes it so crystal clear And it's like I feel like I'm beating my head against a wall.
Amen, but, brother.
Okay, if we recognize that, you know, if you go down and buy a lottery ticket, okay, and you're going to play the lottery, and you're hoping to win that $200 million jackpot, and everybody goes out and they buy a lottery ticket, and then you find out, well, yeah, gee, you got to buy two tickets. Okay, in order to win, in order to even be in the running for the lottery. Now, this is a very poor analogy, but it's the best I can come up with off the top of my head. Would you still go out and buy one ticket if you knew you had to get two tickets to even be in the drawing to win the $200 million? Well, of course not. That'd be stupid, to say the least. Well, we have a presidential election. And the rules for that election are laid out in our Constitution, and they are still somewhat loosely followed. And in that, the Electoral College are the people that vote to elect the president. Why in God's name are you running out to participate in an election where you don't elect the person that's running for office? Why are you casting a vote to begin with, my God?
You're right. And you know why you're right, Rob? Because I just heard another thing I heard today. It nauseated me. Someone's going to win the popular vote anyways, but is not going to become president.
Now, who gives a damn?
Yeah,
honestly,
yeah,
who gives a damn who wins the popular vote? Because it's just it's meaningless. It's absolutely 100% totally meaningless. It is nothing but as a Mike would say, mental masturbation. It's a reach around. We can all feel good about, oh, well, I cast my... So if you know that your vote doesn't elect a damn president, how are you going to then turn around out of the same mouth and tell someone, well, if you don't vote for my guy, you're throwing your vote away? That's horse manure.
Well, you know what, Ron? Not just that, though, but here's the thing.
It's insanity.
But here's the thing. If people want to use this 1992 thing with the Rust Pro, before you say anything, why don't you look it up and see what really happened? It took me 5 minutes to find it. It took me 5 minutes to find the statistical analysis. And guess what? Rust Perot's 18.8% of the vote spread out over 50 states had zero effect. Zero. And he had the most votes by an independent since Teddy Roosevelt. He had
many votes did he have from the Electoral College? What was his
zero
percentage?
Zero.
Exactly my point. Thank
right.
you.
Yes, Ron. You, but what I'm saying is these people are so ridiculous. I mean, they paid the $40 a month, and they think they're a talk show host. Well, you better be able to back up your statements.
See, that's the point. That is it in a nutshell. If Ross Perot had gotten 20 electoral votes, then you might actually have some meager form of an argument. But still,
well,
you're tilting at windmills because you don't know, you still don't know at that point, if those 20 electoral votes would have otherwise voted for Clinton or the other guy.
Or Bush, exactly. Exactly.
You just don't know.
And as a matter of fact, you know, people are telling me that a vote for Gary Johnson is a vote for Obama. Well, guess what? I did the research. And actually, a very interesting hypothesis has come out that, you know, part of Obama's biggest base in 2008 was the youth vote, who have become very disenfranchised. Well, a lot of that youth vote that will refuse to vote for Romney and is disgusted with Obama would actually take votes away from Obama. It would actually help Mitt Romney.
Certainly.
But people don't. But this is what I'm saying. How messed up this entire world is. You spend your $40, you make a title on your show. Now you think you're Sean Hannity, and you're going to tell me, and then you think I'm not going to look this stuff up?
Well, you know that's
amazing.
Like the state of Georgia, we have 45 electors, okay, in the state, and they're equally divided. There's 15 Republicans, 15 Democrats, and 15 Independents or Libertarians.
Okay.
So if we just take it at face value that all the Democrats are going to vote for the Democrat and all the Republicans are going to vote for the Republican, who does that leave, ladies and gentlemen, in the Electoral College to decide the election?
Can you say that one more time? My wife is Jersey Housewives on it. I just got deflected. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've got 45 electors, so there's 15 Democrat, 15 and 15. Okay, so if we just take it at face value that all the Democrats will vote for the Democrat that's running and all the Republicans will vote for the Republican that's running, who's left to decide the election?
I guess the Libertarians.
And that is at the Electoral College level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not the Fantasy Five game that everybody's playing at their local polling booth. On election day. That's the actual voters, not the pretend voters, not the American Idol, you know, we'll let the audience decide, get your clicker out. It's the reality of the situation. Either one of these two that are running, if they want to win the presidency, are going to have to entice the independent, libertarian-minded Electoral College voters into voting for them. And I don't think that either one of them has given any reason for an independent to vote for them.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, Ron, because here's the thing. Nobody is doing – I mean, the more and more research I do on Paul Ryan, this guy's a socialist. I love it. He's bashing Obama for the defense cuts coming in January. He voted for them.
Yes.
He voted for H.R. 347. He voted for
Mike, he said, you know, the only reason he voted for some of those things is because they attached, to, you know, it was attached to a defense spending bill that he's in favor of. So, I mean, you know, he wasn't really being a true socialist Marxist or anything like that.
Yeah, well, that's horse manure.
I know.
You know that. But not only that, guys, and I've got this on YouTube, and I'll be playing this Friday night. He was berating, he didn't say her by name, but it was directed to Nancy Pelosi, about the debt ceiling increase. He voted for it, guys.
Yeah,
he voted for it.
They all did.
I mean,
that's not true.
That barely passed. That was not unanimous, Linda. That was tight. And Paul Ryan was one of them.
Let me give you a little rundown on something, okay? I mean, outside of Ryan, let's turn back the hands of time to 2007 for a moment.
Sure.
We'll get Sherman and Peabody and we'll get in the Wayback Machine, okay? For those of you that are old enough to remember that.
Yeah, I remember the cartoon.
And we're going to go way back to 2007 when there was an emergency session of Congress and everybody had their proverbial panties in a wad running around. The sky is falling, and we need to save the banks. We need to save the banking system. We're going to have pandemonium and martial law if we don't pass this bailout plan. Everybody remember that?
Yeah,
everybody remember the news stories? And I mean, we were inundated daily. And is there anybody out there that can remember the news stories? Did you ever get the feeling that this was something Congress came and just threw together real quick as a stopgap measure, as an emergency thing? Did you get that feeling, that sense that that's what was going on up there?
Sure.
Absolutely. And would it surprise you to know that the very bill that they were debating on and they actually passed was first proposed by a Democrat out of Ohio in the year 2005?
Democrat in Ohio, 2005. Who was that?
It was a female. I don't remember her name. I've got it somewhere in my archives somewhere.
Oh, if I would take you 2 seconds to Google. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about the internet. You can get all your answers.
But, I mean, here's it. Well, no, I'm telling you, you probably won't find it by doing a Google search. I had to go in on Thomas when they first passed the bill, and I went and looked at the sponsor and backtracked the bill to its origin, and it was 2005, and this Democrat woman from Ohio. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't add up, because, you know, I just watched a whole theatrical play about how this was an emergency thing. They just rushed it, and they didn't have time to read it. We've just got to get it, and we've got to do it.
Yeah, right.
The healthcare bill.
You see, this is what I mean, folks. I mean, it's like, oh, Paul Ryan, he's a deficit hawk. I'm gonna produce four things Friday night to these Romney Ryan fanatics that says to the contrary, and I'm supposed to forfeit. We call ourselves patriots, like these other freedom this and freedom that. And I'm supposed to vote for socialists. Are you kidding me?
Look,
the thing. And one last thing with Ryan, then I'll, you know, he.
No worries.
Right now he's saying, you know, we need to cut Medicare so people like me, you know, under 55, we're getting screwed. But under the Bush regime, he voted for the biggest Medicare expansion.
Medicare Part D and the prescription drug. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So which is it? Now, here's me. Maybe it's me. I'm a little effed up, you know. I go by what people do and not what people say. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little
Shame on you, Mike.
Well, that's
you can't,
the thing, Mike.
You know,
I'm
look,
an
this
idiot.
Is this is politics. You can't go by their records. You've got to listen to what they tell you.
Right.
I mean,
no,
they're
no,
never going to lie to you.
No.
I think it was.
That's what's really in their heart. They're just never able to actually carry it out. They can't put actions to their words, but they try.
Right. It's so tough to vote
now. It was George Washington who said deeds, not words.
Precisely.
And he was right.
That's precisely it.
Yeah,
and
it's not words, it's deeds.
You know, I'll go back to, when was it? 2010? After the midterm elections. And everybody was rah, 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 and there was rumors out that Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich was going to get in the running. And we had some folks on Patriot Families that, you know, had not done due diligence on Newt Gingrich, and living in Georgia and having been a study of politics for a while, I knew damn good and well who Mr. Gingrich was, and I knew he was a snake. And so I started posting articles on Patriot Family. And I didn't get a lot of argument. I saw people, you know, flatly going, oh, my God, and changing their minds immediately. The guy's a globalist, plain and simple.
Yeah, and he's also a power-hungry schmuck. He's the flip-flop of Obama.
Look, he's exceedingly intelligent. There's no question about it.
Right.
Look, he is intelligent in the vein of, I hate to keep going back to, you know, Plato's Republic and Socrates, but if you go and read the story of Socrates and the Oracle of Delphi, when Socrates asked the Oracle, who's the wisest man in all the world, and the Oracle says, well, you, Socrates, are. Well, he knew that couldn't be possible because he wasn't smart enough. He knew a little bit about quite a few things, but he was no expert. And so he went out and began questioning all the experts, and what he learned was that they didn't know jack. While they had this great education and a wonderful vocabulary, when it really got down to the crux of the problem or their area of expertise, they knew less than he did. And that's Newt Gingrich.
Wow.
He has all these ideologies, but it's not real wisdom.
Yeah. But, Ron, it's so easy. It's so easy to look anybody up on the Internet and see what they've done. It is so easy.
Well, I know it is. That,
it takes
that's
5 minutes.
Ron Paul.
I mean, it takes 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And
ask any question to yourself on Google, and it's there.
The really infuriating thing, one of the really infuriating things for me, is that just about every single person I have ever had a calm, casual conversation with about Ron Paul without getting all wound up and shouting expletives back and forth at one another, every single one of them will admit to me, yeah, I know they're all liars. Yes, I agree. Ron Paul's the only one telling the truth. He's just crazy.
God.
And I'm like, wow. So
I mean, how do people
is,
reconcile that explanation, though? Like, how do they reconcile that?
Cognitive dissonance, my man. They want to be lied to. They expect to be lied to. You can't tell me that you didn't spend your entire life growing up hearing every other week that politicians are snakes and liars, and we expect them to be snakes and liars. That's just the nature of the beast. That's certainly what I was taught growing up. See, if you lower your expectations all the way down to nothing, well, then when someone comes along that exceeds all the expectations and has the brazen temerity to actually speak the truth, well, there's got to be something wrong with that guy.
It's sad. So sad.
Well, see, I expected that from people on the street, you know, but I guess I'm just so damn naive. Well, first of all, you know, I've only been on BTR for 5 months, and, you know, you're the Page of Family Network is one of the first ones, you know, that I started listening to after I started doing my show. And so, you know, to me, I feel my show is unique, your shows are unique. And, but, you know, I expected after listening to, you know, you folks for a while and me doing what I'm doing that, you know, wow, this must be like a universally knowledgeable place, you know? And then you start going into these other rooms.
They're clueless.
And it's like,
they're clueless.
It's like, why are they even here? And here's the scary part. They're getting 25, 30 people in their chat rooms at a clip.
Well, you know what a lemon is, right?
Oh, yeah, they follow it off the clip. Of course.
It's a sheep in a different costume.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, when you first appeared on my show and, you know, I was like, who is this guy? I was like, wow. You know, and Ron was cracking up because he knows how I feel about people who are pretty much like-minded and they're coming from out of the blue. It's like, where did this guy come from? But it was quite cool. But see, we have a history with BTR and Patriot Families whereby I wasn't always well enlightened. I know Ron, when he started doing his shows and stuff, and everybody was doing blogs and we were doing chat room stuff on Patriot Family site, and then we got our shows up and running, and all of the videos and all of the, I mean, hours and hours and hours of things he's sent to all of us, whether it was Bohemian Grove, whether it was, you know, The Secret of Oz, whatever, I knew that Ron had done extensive homework. And so many people, Mike, they're too lazy to do anything. They don't have an original thought of their own. And if you ever call me Sean Hannity amateur hour again, I swear.
No, not you. No.
I'm kidding.
I said
you're
President
a great American.
I said President Company accepted. I said,
yes,
no.
Our shows are way more entertaining than he is. He's a one-trick pony, and he's boring me to tears.
No, but I said outside of.
Yeah, outside
President,
of.
Yeah, President that, Company yeah. excluded. And,
right.
And Linda, you're a great American.
where's my barf bag? Oh, no.
You know, I want to give a perfect example of what Mike's talking about and what Linda's talking about, kind of bring those two things together for a moment. If you go to the Patriot Family's website, you'll look up, and if you look up members, you'll see that we've got about 358 members. When I started on Patriot Families, they were fairly young, fairly new, had just separated from a different group. And I got to tell you, we had on any given day 15, 20 people in our chat room on Patriot Families every day, almost all day. People talking back and forth. When the radio shows first started, I was the first one to do a radio show on Patriot Families. Mm. Had tons of listeners. Go to the Patriot Families website today. You'll see one person always in the chat room, Miss Yola. Oh. You'll see a few drift in and out, like myself, Rod Luke, Miss Linda, Chuck once in a while. Every once in a blue moon, you'll see Tom Kiley swing in and then swing back out. My point is,
I get notes from him, the spiritual stuff.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to air my issues with that with Tom on the air. It's a private thing, and it's just, mm-hmm. it is what it is. But the point is that we had all these people, and only a few, only just a few, have hung with us, and actually, they get it. They understand it now more than ever. And I used to get from Miss Linda and from Miss Yola, okay, I get it now. Okay, now I get it. I get it. And I'm like, not yet, but you're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I had the absolute privilege of being present a couple of times when the light bulb actually first really cranked
went
wide
off.
Open and went ding. And I was like, yes, now you got it. And she has been on a tear ever since. And
mm-hmm.
God bless her for it, you know. But we, you know, look, guys, we have to be consistent. We have to be persistent. And above all, we really should be polite. And we've got to know our argument, our topic, inside and out,
mm-hmm.
if we're going to sway hearts and minds. And get people to actually think, and only a few, such a small percentage, are actually going to get it. That only a few will the light bulb go on,
right.
and they will be so much better off for it.
Right. Well, I had said to when I laid out the challenge, I said, and if anybody wants to see my notes for my show, because I also created a blogger.com thing, and I'm going to be
mm-hmm.
popping that link into my chat room this Friday night. For people to see how much work I put into this. My reference,
oh, sure.
I had 9 pages of references. And those were not transcripted. Those were like one-liners, links,
mm-hmm.
the pattern of my show. I doubt these people have a page. Just listening to their rhetoric. It's the same stuff I'm hearing on TV. Or,
right.
or what Aunt Shirley said down the street. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Look, they're repeating, they're regurgitating
right.
what they've heard. They don't have
right.
a clue. If you try to get into a substantive debate on the issue,
it breaks down.
They're lost in 30 seconds flat because it's a deer in the headlight.
Yeah,
they don't know anything about foreign policy. They believe certain things about foreign policy because they've heard Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity say them.
Right, and when you hear the same crap for 9 years, it becomes true. It becomes truth.
Sure.
Yeah,
and you know,
the indoctrination is quite clear.
Look, it's like going to school, okay? Linda and I were talking about that earlier. You take a bunch of children who are young and impressionable and haven't really had time to form much in the way of real opinions, okay? They know likes and dislikes, but that's about it. They haven't actually formed an opinion on anything,
mm-hmm.
and you know, except maybe spinach or broccoli, but, you know. You send them into a classroom, and it's all uniform. You send them into this square cubicle
right.
room. You set them in there with a whole bunch of kids, and the teacher tells them, "Okay, here's what we're going to believe today, and we're going to discuss this." And they're going to give them the version of the truth, right? And they keep repeating
mm-hmm.
it. And anyone who asks questions, anyone who acts outside of going along with what is being regurgitated to them is ostracized, and there must be something wrong with him. And so
yep.
they use that group setting
sure.
to create peer pressure to get you to conform to the ideology that they want you to accept. And then once we've been indoctrinated in that for, you know, 12 years of school, if you don't go on to university and get absolutely indoctrinated, it is an absolute miracle to me that any students graduating high school get into college and go through 4 years of university study and come out anything less than a socialist, Marxist, Nazi.
Yep.
I mean, wow. And thank God there are some actually decent professors out there, even at Yale University,
yes.
I might add.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I don't know if I sent you that link, but the gentleman that was speaking on GBTV, he is a professor at Yale, and he just totally hates the system, the education system. He's like, I think we should tear the whole thing down and start over. It's nuts.
Exactly.
And
he actually
advocated the two-room schoolhouse that my mother had in Kansas.
I think we ought to tear the whole damn governmental system of education down and leave it to the parents to educate their children. And
like
let the market, the free market, will fill that vacuum.
You betcha. It will. Exactly what Milton Friedman would say, and you're correct. And this is why I have so much respect for Miss Terry Rowland, because that woman, when she's in her classroom, she's not going to lie to those kids. And like I said to Michael Magic one time, I said, look, I said, that woman's so well-read, I would have to live to be 600 years old to catch up to her.
Mm.
And she's not going to tell them lies. This woman's going to give them the truth and encourage them to ask questions. Like my dad did. He taught high school for 28 years. He had to have the reading lab at the last 11 or 12 years. Those kids, he says, my God, I'm trying to teach them English, and they can't even spell their own names because they don't know how to read. They're 16 years old.
They've got to have the fundamentals before they get into high school, and at that point we need to be teaching or giving them the tools to become, as Terry says, to become lifelong learners. The most important one is the ability of critical thought, critical thinking.
Yes.
Don't let me tell you what to believe. You go in and search it out for yourself, because
that's where
the real foundational truth lies, because that's why I kept telling everyone all along that, you know, everybody kept in the beginning, everybody said, well, what do we do? What's the answer? I said, I can't give you that. You've got to learn that for yourself. There are no simple answers that I can give you that are going to suffice. It just won't. You've got to learn the truth yourself. I can lead you in the direction of, hey, look over here, okay? Just a suggestion. And you know, if you don't embrace it and understand it yourself, then it's pointless. You know, you're going to be just like all the Hannityites. And I believe... I think we have Michael Magic on the line.
Awesome.
Good evening, everyone. What a pleasure to know all of you, I have to say. It's awesome to be part of the Patriot Family group here. I want to make a comment in regards to what I believe is, you know, our biggest challenge as human beings here on Earth is that, you know, and especially in the United States, is we have so many different things to try to overcome. I mean, you know, you have Agenda 21, you know, insider trading, you have, you know, chloride in the water. I mean, the list is so long. It's like taking a box for a picture puzzle and dumping it out on your table and picking up one piece and looking at that piece and trying to start the puzzle from that one piece, you know, when what you should really do is spread out all the pieces and get a good look at the entire picture, and then let's try to fix using a common denominator. You know, let's put this picture together the best way that we can, using the most sensible and logical, you know, morals, values.
Well, you're right, Michael, and I think, you know, while there is a lot of different tentacles to the octopus, so to speak, there's really only one thing that we should focus on. And if we do that, then everything flows from that one focal point. And if we, and I think that's why it's, for me, very important to have a strong foundational faith in God. And whether you want to believe the Bible or not, whether you want to believe in a creator or not, I would defy you to find any fundamental flaw with the precept of the Ten Commandments.
Absolutely.
I mean, where is the shortcoming? Because I don't find one. And
if we would
simply practice the idea that any bill, any law, any public policy, any ordinance, any intrusion into our lives from the outside by government that doesn't comply with one of those fundamental ideas, It shouldn't exist. It
exactly.
just shouldn't exist.
You know what else came to me while I was, after I pray and I wake up and God speaks to me in my dreams, I guess. And I was racking my brain trying to figure out how to, you know, get through these next phases of what's going to befall us. And I was always praying for discernment, wisdom, patience, and that little thing, don't panic.
Don't
and
ever
I figured
pray
it
for
out.
Patience, my dear.
Yeah, and so what I figured out is he already has the answers for me. They're in the Bible. All I have to do is read it, and he will give me every tool I need, and I have no fear.
Do you know, do you understand the concept behind how you might be taught to learn patience? seriously, if there is one thing on this earth that I will never, ever, ever do is pray for patience. Because I could almost promise you that in order to learn patience, you have to be put into a situation where you are absolutely challenged daily to the point where you're about to lose your sanity. Okay?
Okay.
I'm all good with that, but I'm telling you, patience, that's not one I'd want to go to, because I already know that I don't have enough, and I don't want to be tested any more than I already currently am being tested.
It's true. Maybe I used the wrong word.
No, I know. I'm just saying, you know.
But it's true. All my answers are there, and he will show me the way through this. It's got to be
absolutely that
clear. It's got to be that simple. And
you know, we've got a little bit of chat going on in the chat room, and Doc said not just the Ten Commandments, just use the Golden Rule. And I agree, and I think that's what Christ reiterated when he said, you know, I have two commandments, and all of the law and the prophets hang on these two.
Mm-hmm.
Love your God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. And love your neighbor as you love yourself. Do those two things.
Yep.
And it's all good.
Yep.
And that is, you know, that summarizes the Golden Rule, or at least the last one. Do unto others.
Sure.
And, you know, that's, I think Ron Paul got it. I know he got it, because that's one of the things he talked about, you know.
Yeah.
Why can't we just put that into practice?
Dr. Paul's amazing. I love that guy. You know, and like I said, and I remember it was a Friday night, and I was on the freeway, and I was, remember when Brian had his foreclosure show, and I was cruising down to some in San Diego in the middle of the worst rush hour traffic on the planet. He actually almost got on a plane to go see Ron Paul down here that day. I was so privileged to be in the same breathing space as that man and get to hear him speak for 40 minutes without any stupid interruptions by some commie, you know, Sololinskyite on a panel. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. And, you know, I think he has raised a standard, as George Washington would say. You know, he is such a Jacksonian, and he's it. And there's no reason why we shouldn't have a country like our founders envisioned for us. There's no reason for it.
I got to tell you, I think it would benefit everyone here now that the selection process is over.
Yeah.
To go back, I want you to go back and go onto YouTube and watch through the debates again.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me now what you see that you didn't see at that time, because I'll tell you what I see. And there have been many times that I've watched Ron Paul in a debate and thought, man, he really missed the mark. And then I go back and watch it again and go, oh, no, he didn't. I did. I'm the one that missed. I didn't see it. And another thing that you'll probably notice is that the majority of the questions are almost pointless.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, they might as well ask about how the Kardashians are dressing that day. I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
It's stupid.
It's how the questions are phrased.
Right, and they do this on purpose. You know they do this on purpose. And the poor man gets what? How many seconds does he get to whatever they're
right,
given?
Right, gets 90
it's
seconds
ridiculous.
Out of a two-hour debate. Right, exactly.
Now I know how he feels because I've stood up there with my stupid 3-minute timer when I'm in front of the damn city council. Oh, it is frustrating.
Sure, and you've got all this information in your mind that you want to convey, and when you open your mouth, it all rushes out, and they think you're having a stroke because you're talking gibberish.
I know it's my head will explode. But God bless us, and like I said, that Bible is it. And I know Michael Magic will agree, and I know you guys agree. It's my answer. It's going to give me the tools to get through this whatever crisis they've got.
I agree, and I'm telling you, I feel like there's one last barrier that I have to break through, and I don't know. And here's the rub. I don't know that I'm right. Okay. But everything I have ever read, everything I have ever known regarding the Bible tells me that this is correct. Everything in my spirit just screams out. And that is the preterist view, the past fulfillment. And knowing the agenda, connecting the dots, from way back in the garden until today, it just makes so much sense. I have had a sense of being led along to believe something that isn't true for a very long time when it comes to Scripture, and I always had a lot of questions, and I felt guilty about having those questions based on what I was being taught the Bible means. And it wasn't until I stumbled across or had this preterist idea put in front of me, I was like a kid in a candy store. I couldn't get enough.
Sure.
And I am most assuredly the world's worst representative of the preterist doctrine or eschatology or whatever the fancy word is they use for it. But I'm telling you guys, it makes sense.
Here's the thing, because you've talked about this before, and I know because you've done shows on the preterist view. I'm one of the Christians, and because I've been with Patriot Families a long time, and I've studied, I've read so many books, I can't, good Lord. Whether he's coming back or not, I am not sitting on a couch waiting for it. I don't care if it's 5 minutes from now or 500 years from now. I'm working the deal. I'm going to do his will, not mine, in his time.
To me, it has been the most liberating thing, except for being saved. To understand, to go through my daily life, okay, recognizing that I was given a gift, and I'm not waiting on anything. I need to move forward, okay?
Yep.
The promise has already been fulfilled.
Yep.
And, there's no need. If you're waiting, you're left behind. You're
exactly.
Like I look at it now, and I see the story of the 10 talents. The two servants that the master gave each one 10 talents. And one he went out and he took risk. He took a risk with his master's money. And he multiplied it, doubled it. And the other guy was so worried to risk anything that he went out and buried it in the yard.
Yep, I remember that.
Okay? And we can't be, we cannot be that guy that's burying his gifts in the backyard.
Yep.
We've got to be the guy that recognizes that the master has come, he's given us the gift, and it's our responsibility to march forward and do something with it. Rather than hiding, sitting on our hands, waiting, going, well, he's going to be back any minute now. He's coming. Just look around. It all makes sense. It all lines up. It all lines up, but you got to take a look at it in the context that, the Bible was written by Jews, for Jews. It had everything to do with the Jewish tradition with Israel, God's chosen people. It was their guidebook. It wasn't until we get to the New Testament that we see the promise extended to the Gentiles. God told them from the very beginning to the doggone end that he was going to destroy Israel. Read Isaiah, read Jeremiah, read through the book, for goodness sake.
Right.
And so what makes you believe that after God fulfilled his promise and they were absolutely demolished, wiped from the face of the earth as a religion, as a doctrine, as a people, that there's going to be this rebuilding, that we're going to rebuild Babylon, for God's sakes.
Oh, my God, yes.
That's the wrong side of the aisle, because that's what the Mosquito class wants you to believe. And, you know, so you've got this divide, right, between the evil Mosquito class and the rest of us, the Christians. But then within the Christians, you've got this gigantic piece of the pie that's been carved off, divided off, and they're still believing in something that, to my mind, was utterly demolished, and it was demolished by God.
Sure.
And I don't see any difference between trying to build up the modern nation state of Israel and trying to build a one world order and rebuild the Tower of Babylon. They're one and the same.
I think it makes sense. It really does. Especially when you gave us the readings from Josephus that you did. I mean, it just ties to, it was like an incredible, massive history lesson.
And you know, Josephus didn't have a dog in the fight, so to speak. He was a Jew. He was one of the Levite class. He was one of the priests, not in the temple in Jerusalem, but in Judah. He was the high priest in Judah. So I mean, this wasn't a mistake. You know, he saw the reference. He understood it. He knew it, and he didn't come out and say it, but he came right next to saying, as a Jew, wow, Christ really is the Messiah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
he didn't say it, but it had to have crossed his mind. Did you want a piece of that? It had to. I mean, you can read it in his writing and the culmination of everything.
Sure.
And, you know, everybody's got 15 million arguments of, okay, well, if that's true, if the scripture was fulfilled in 70 A.D., then when did this happen? When was the millennial reign? Okay, well, I don't know. You tell me, what was the millennial reign, or what is the millennial reign going to be? What does Scripture say it's going to be? See, you don't know. You just know that it says that Christ will rule and reign for 1,000 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that he's going to come down and put on a crown and sit on a throne in Jerusalem and rule and reign in the flesh? Or does it mean something different? Well, you're going to argue that it means something different, or that it means something literal, that he's going to do that. But how do you derive that from that one passage? How do you reconcile that with the whole rest of the book? You can't.
I know. Yeah.
You can want to believe that, and that's okay, but what if you're wrong?
Oh, I know.
That's the frightening part. If I'm wrong, no harm, no foul, because he's yet to come back. But in the meantime, let's just keep moving forward and stop twiddling our thumbs thinking it's going to be any day, or believing that we're the ones that are going to be saved. You're already saved. He's not coming back to save us a second time. You're already saved. So put your faith in that. Walk forward.
It's a done deal. Oh, my God.
Go back to Romans and put on that whole armor and stand up and take it.
Aaron.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think one of the things that we need to look here, and I think you and I have had this conversation before, and we may disagree a little bit, and I am happy to say that we agree to disagree, but when you look at, the entire earth, it was never meant to last for an indefinite time. I mean, the population growth has never gone down. More people have always been every year than die. So this earth was not ever made to last forever. And that's why, you know, I think from my readings in the Bible, and you know that I feel the way I do. And as far as the rebuilding of Babylon, they currently have the largest, embassy in the world. You know, all of this, and that's where Babylon originally was over in Iraq.
Sure. As was the garden, as we know it, the Garden of Eden, allegedly or supposedly, was also in Iraq. And I think that alone, Michael, to me, bolsters the preterist argument. The fact of the matter is that everything centered around that area of the world, the Middle East, because that's where it all began. That's where the 12 tribes of Israel descended from Jacob. Okay? And everything in that book, from the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, until Revelation, is dealing with that immediate vicinity, the known world to the Jews, not the whole globe. I don't know how anyone could read it any other way. It's certainly human nature that we want to give it universal application to the entire globe, because we want to be included, and we were included in the New Testament and the Gentiles, and it was for everyone. Christ didn't just sacrifice himself for a few, and that was the culmination of the promise that was first given.
Exactly, Ron, and you know, even before Christ died, you know, for all peoples, you know, on earth, okay, you know, God loved every one of us. I mean, before we were even conceived, you know, his love is infinite. I mean, that covers a lot of time and a lot of ground right there.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, we go back and if we look at it just from a pragmatic standpoint, we know that there were human beings in other parts of the world outside of the Middle East during the time of Christ. It's a given. I honestly think that, you know, the deal with the earth, I don't know if God intended for it to last forever or not. You know, Mike made the comment that some will one day supernova. It could be that God's created it perfect and it will never supernova and the world will last forever. We just don't know that.
Well, you know, as far as the sun goes, I did a little bit of research, and real quickly, either 10 miles further away or 10 miles closer, and we would burn up here on Earth or we would freeze to death. So I think he really has his finger on the pulse of the sun, as far as that.
Yeah. Let me give you a problem that we're going to run into with that thinking, okay? And yes, we've seen a lot of stars. We've witnessed some supernova events. But here's our problem. If we go back, let's follow the logic of science and evolution for a moment. And let's say that the Earth is, 150 billion years old or whatever, 45 billion, okay? Our sun is shrinking, boys and girls. It's not a constant size. We know that. So if we turn the clock backwards and we assume a fixed rate of shrinkage of the sun, and we go back 45 billion years, do you know how large the sun would be? Too big for this planet to exist. Far too big for this planet to exist.
Absolutely, Ron. And on that note, I just want to say thank you for taking my call. And I love everybody, and I'll pray for everybody. I hope Bill's father is doing better. And I'll keep everybody in my prayers. Thank you again so much, and God bless everyone.
Thanks, Michael.
Absolutely.
God bless you.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, you can go look it up online. You know, the numbers are out there, and I don't remember the exact figure, if it was 13 times its current size or 130 times. But either way, it would be a hell of a lot closer to us than it is now because it would be that much larger. And there wouldn't be any life on this planet. It would be a smoldering cinder.
So, how much time do you have left?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to ask God about that tonight. You know, could be 10 minutes.
On the show.
Could be 10 minutes.
I think you got 10 minutes.
Years. Yeah, I got 10 minutes.
Okay. Okay, well, you know, go ahead, Mike.
Oh,
me? No, I'm just, you know, the thing about Israel and you know, all roads lead to the Middle East, you know, again, people just have to do the research. You know, Israel has been clamoring off and on and on and off that Iran has been close to be getting ready to have nukes since 1979. So what story is the right one? You're saying they could have had it in the 70s. They were working on it. They did business with Iran, sold them technology and whatnot. 1992. They said that they were 5 years away. Then that went dormant. And now we're back to Iran might have nukes again. I mean, which is the right story?
Occam's razor, man.
You know, it's just amazing. And I think part of it is the fact that, you know, Iraq is almost done. The whole world is seeing that Afghanistan is a complete failure. And now we need another place to move our military industrial complex. We got to move it somewhere else. So
well,
now here
and
we go.
We've got Iran surrounded, so why not?
And then, but the funny thing is, after you do Iran, you know what's left? China, Russia.
Well, that presumes that China and Russia aren't on board, and I think that presumes a lot.
You mean on board with us or with Iran?
On board with the agenda of a one world order.
Mm.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There.
Because I think quite honestly, if we really do a pragmatic search, you've got to ask yourself some really hard questions about World War II. And why number one did we side with the Soviets? Why did we give over half of Europe to the Soviets?
Mm.
I mean, we really have to address some of those questions.
Yeah, and I found a website. I didn't get a chance to talk about it Friday because they ran out of time. But military documents have just been declassified. For over 60 years, we were led to believe that there was a certain massacre. I have the link. I got to refresh myself. I have it in my notes.
You're talking about the Polish massacre at Katyn.
Yes.
It turns out to be the Soviets did it all along.
Yes, sir. I sent Linda a link to that the other day.
Amazing.
Yeah, I found that on my own,
amazing.
Yeah. And I just ran out of time Friday.
Now, you know, and of course, Robert's mother actually worked for General George Patton. He was a pretty interesting character, and you can go read about Patton. He said not so flatteringly of World War II that we were fighting the wrong enemy. We were fighting the wrong people.
Mm.
And what he meant by that was we shouldn't be fighting the Germans. We ought to be fighting the Jews. And I don't say that to be an anti-Semite. That's his words, not mine. He also told the president that if he would give him two battalions in 30 days, he could defeat the Russians.
Mm.
And, you know, George Patton died in a car accident.
Now, they all seem to die mysteriously.
Yeah, here
they?
We go again with this doggone conspiracy theory, but, you know, I really believe in Occam's razor. And if you apply Occam's razor to the big picture and not all the little bitty instances along the way, but apply it evenly and equally across the whole spectrum, I think that the idea of a few people around the world trying to establish a single one world government is the simplest of solutions, the simplest explanation.
Right.
Could you send me something on that Occam's razor deal?
Sure. I mean, it's just a philosophy. Mm-hmm. Occam's razor is
how do you
the philosophy. O-C-H-A-M-S razor, like a shaving razor.
That's a little quick. O-C-H-A.
M-S.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, the cool. Simplest explanation is usually the correct one.
Mm.
That's yep. The philosophy of Occam's razor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to all these crazy machinations to try and make sense out of something, the simplest right. Explanation is usually the correct explanation, and I've found that to be true. Now, to say that the ideology of a one-world government and everything that's transpired from the 1700s till today is the simplest explanation is kind of maybe a little overblown, but instead of trying to separate it all out and individualize each little occurrence and to look at the thing as a whole, it makes infinite sense, and it is quite simple.
So this is why I keep coming back here, you know, and joining you folks, and that's why I love when you join my show. I always come away, away with something, always.
And if you guys get a chance, I'll probably spot on my show, just because, you know, information is good, knowledge is power. We can all talk about it later on another show, but Wednesday and Thursday on GBTV, an eight-month documentary, preparing it for, it's called The Project. Apparently it is the Muslim Brotherhood's manifesto and their plans and why and it's supposed to explain what's going on in the Middle East, what just happened in Libya and Egypt, and what, you know, what's going on in our own government.
When is this on, Linda?
It's GBTV, 8 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday and Thursday. It's a two-part documentary.
Oh, it's Glenn Beck. I can't afford to pay his thing yet.
Yeah.
Now
I got to start my new job first.
I want to give you a little suggestion, and I'm not saying it's correct. I'm just saying it's an interesting concept.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Go do some research on the Catholic Church created Islam.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dear.
But, yes. You know, what I was saying, the only reason I was mentioning it, I'm not saying that we should take this at face value or we should swallow the Kool-Aid or whatever. It's just something that maybe we should take a look at and then discuss it at a later time and either pick it apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Look, we've got to keep an open mind, and good information can come from very, very many different sources. And right. the reason I mention the thing about the Catholic Church and their relationship to Islam through Muhammad's wife.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Important. And you look at the sites, okay, and you look at the similarities between the two religions. This goes back to my theory. This is my own personal theory and understanding. But you see, after 70 AD, the church that was built on the foundation of Christ and the apostles, the gospel, it went more or less uninterrupted for 1,000 years.
Wow.
And
it was right around,
interestingly enough, it was right around the 1,000-year mark that there was a split in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And that split, or schism, if you will, is what created the modern-day, what we know as the Roman Catholic Church and the Roman Catholic doctrine. That was the original split. So I find it very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too far removed before the split that we had Muhammad coming on the scene, whose wife was either Coptic or Catholic. There's some debate over that. So again, if we have this theme where, as we saw in the garden, that we want to pervert God's plan, okay, well, the best way to do that from within is to pervert the church and the doctrine. And, you know, every good empire needs an enemy. And you've got one ready-made in Islam.
Yep.
And I think that the two doctrines are being used and have been used for millennia now to try and bring about a holy war,
mm-hmm.
To destroy the very idea of Christianity. That's what's gonna. That's what the goal is, I think. And that's why I think that's why you're seeing the administration now. And you know, Hillary, who would have thought she was a Muslim? I mean, you know, but they're certainly promoting the ideology over everything else, guys. It's the only thing that makes sense.
Yep, and that's what I think is partially exposed in this documentary. I do not know all of it. I just got some glimpses of it, but. The evil is just abound. I mean, we know. And what we need is answers, you know, to our questions. And, of course, the Bible gives us pretty much it. But we have to connect the dots to what's going on today, and we really need to know what the truth is. That's why you and I and everybody listening and Mike and all of our group, we keep digging for the truth. We don't care how bad it scares us. We just need to know it.
Well,
you know?
I think we do know the truth, and so you know we have more responsibility, you know, to work within our own families, like how we, because you know we send our kids to school, they're going to be 10 years old, learning how to put a condom on a banana, and then we have to be there for them when they come home, and say, well, that's not the correct thing, it's abstinence and it's morality. And it's discipline, and it's doing what's right. New York City just passed now where 13 New York City high schools are going to hand out to children the morning after pill and contraceptives without parental consent. Now, instead of teaching abstinence, let's teach them promiscuity. I mean, it's the war on drugs. It's the war on poverty. It's the war on AIDS. It's the war on terror.
It's the war on morality.
They're all lies. They're all lies.
It's the
war
on morality.
Christianity, on Christmas. It's endless. But I do know that the communists also, and I know that Hitler believes this too, that you've got to take God out of the picture. You've got to indoctrinate. You've got to mandate. I mean, they all did it.
I want to say one parting shot here about this whole thing with the Islam and everything, and it's. It's really easy. I've read a lot about Islam. I believe it is absolutely purely born out of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to remember, just like we don't want to attack those of the left ideology and repay evil with evil, we've got to bear that in mind with Islam as well. And we have to recognize that Islam is a tool that's being used
mm-hmm.
against another tool. And that other tool is the revisionist Christianity that's being created for us, okay, to pit the two at odds with one another. And I know so many Christians that are absolutely adamant in their hatred of homosexuals and Muslims and all these other things that they're just like the you got to go out and vote for Mitt Romney crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're identical. Yep. In fact, they're comprised largely of them.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh my God.
And this is where, an immovable object meets an unstoppable force, and that's where we're headed.
I know.
And if we're going to get through this thing with our brains intact, we've got to be able to recognize that as we're moving into it and not be overcome and get sucked into the game that's being played and be deceived and fooled into believing something that's not true.
Mm. Yeah. But you know what? It's
Ron,
funny. Once you open that door and take that red pill, boy, everything just opens up, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does.
I know we're probably in archives, and
oh yes, we are.
Thank you so much for taking the call, and you guys left, and I'll see you, whoever's on the air tomorrow.
I may be hosting. Absolutely.
Okay, guys, God bless.
Thanks for calling in, Linda.
Thanks.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mike, I want to ask you if, you know, I had sent a link a couple of times to a guy who was doing a Bible study in Revelation. And I don't know if you ever got a chance to watch or listen to the link.
I know you had, Ron, and I was gonna, and then I should have put into favorites. And was that David Jeremiah? Oh, no.
No, hang on. His name is... I'm pulling it up. Frank Spear. And I've got a link right here for you.
Perfect.
I'm not going to make you dig for it.
Thank you.
But I'm telling you, I mean it from the bottom of my heart, because there's a lot of people that I've talked to about this doctrine, I guess, if for lack of a better thing to call it.
Mm.
You're one of the few that has a mind that is open to listening, to your heart and to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that link. It's called Life in the New Jerusalem. And the segments are pretty small. Some of them are 20, 30 minutes long. Some of them are 10 minutes long. There's 10 total.
Okay.
And if you look at the page, if you scroll all the way to the top of the page on the left, there's a black box that says Back to the Blog.
Yes.
That will take you back to the main page where you can go to the other 9 parts of the series.
Okay, good.
In those 10 parts of that series, he covers like 2 portions of Revelation, chapters 20 and 21. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, but I'll definitely check it out.
In those two chapters, he covers the whole of the Bible and all of the... a lot of teaching. And if you can listen through what that man says and you can find fault with his understanding, I would be very much entertaining a discussion on it. But
sure.
I'm telling you, I think the guy has got it nailed to the wall. He gets it.
Okay,
and
I'll definitely check it out. I mean, I never turn anything away. You know,
No, I understand that, and I think it is to me so important for us to understand the fallacy of Israel today as it's been presented to us our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't know about you, but I wasn't around in 1948 when it was refounded.
No, sir, neither was I.
And I think it's important to note that, you know, the refounding of Israel was something that was undertaken by a group, and one of that group was close friends with a guy named Karl Marx.
Oh, yes.
And it was being done back in the 1800s, and that's when they formed the World Zionist Organization.
Okay.
And it in 1948, when we had the United Nations after the end of the war, 1945 is when they voted on their charter. There were 2 countries that had the majority vote on the council that voted to recognize Israel as a nation state, and that was the United States and Russia.
Mm.
And if you know any of your history from the Bolshevik Revolution, I mean, it starts to make infinite sense.
Well, I thought Great Britain annexed Israel.
Well, they did. They absolutely did. That was in World War I, and what you're talking about is the Balfour Declaration.
Okay.
But the problem that arose under the Balfour Declaration after World War I is that the word got out that the British weren't going to honor their commitment, and they were just going to keep it as it was.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, the Palestinians and the Jews were living very peacefully with one another at that time. It wasn't until they got the idea that we're going to plant our flag and we're going to own property, we're going to get our promised land back, that the Jews began initiating terrorist bombings and murdered some British military officers and soldiers in a hotel in Jerusalem, and that's when the British clamped down on it, okay? Mm-hmm. And the original terrorists, if you will, were the Zionists.
Hmm.
They wanted total control of Jerusalem, even though the majority of them didn't believe in God, didn't believe in Judaism. They were Zionists. They were political Zionists, and they didn't give a damn about religion or God. It was about control of property and perpetrating the Jewish bloodline.
Is that why the Iraqi, the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad? Is that Ahmadinejad?
Ahmadinejad, yes.
That's the dude that people are saying his true translation was this Zionist.
Israel should be wiped from the map.
Right, but.
Yes.
But the true translation, people are saying, is that what he said was that this Zionist regime has to go.
That is correct.
There's a difference.
There's also a difference because he has said Israel should be wiped from the map. And I think that is being misconstrued, in my humble opinion, that all these people see, they believe what he means is that we're just going to kill all the Jews. That's not what he means.
Mm.
I don't think so. I think what he's saying, if we were able to translate it and sit down and have a talk with him, is that Israel, as it exists on a map, should not be there.
Well, why doesn't he explain himself?
Well, who's going to listen? And if he did, would they tell you?
Well, that's true. Well, yeah. Unless he does something live, I mean, I don't know.
Right. I mean, but who's going to carry it? What network? And then you have to listen to a translation, see?
No, that's true.
That's the problem I had with that Richard guy when he called in. He said, oh, they've been supplying weapons to kill our soldiers. And I said, how do you know that? He said, well, they've found, bombs and stuff with Iranian markings. How do you know that? Who told you that?
Yeah, where's the discernible proof? Where did he find
this
out?
Right. I mean, I hate to be a jerk about it, but at the same time, the very government that you're fighting against and you don't like because you know they lie to you and they steal from you, when they tell you something you want to believe, you believe it.
Yeah, so that's the point, right.
I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And I think there's something bigger to that picture. And, you know, I started to get into it with him about, have you ever heard of the World Bank? Okay, so go to the World Bank's website, and they have an interactive map. And on their interactive map, they show you all the sites around the world where they're funding projects. Look at Iran. How many projects is the World Bank funding within Iran?
Where could you find this?
World Bank. Just to look up World Bank, you can go to their website.
Mm.
And there's an interactive map that shows you where they have funding projects. Now, it won't tell you what those projects are.
Right.
But it will show you that they've got 6 or 7 active projects being funded in Iran. Well, guess what? Where does that money come from? It comes from the IMF. And who has a majority vote on the IMF board? The United States. So
the International Monetary Fund, right?
So you got to start asking questions. If the United States has a veto vote, we say, no, it doesn't happen. It doesn't get funded. If Iran's this evil nation that's trying to build nuclear weapons and destroy the Jews who we're supposed to be protecting, because that's what the Bible tells us, why are we funding these projects and what are they?
Mm.
I mean, you know, it's just a little bit of logic and pragmatism. I'm not the smartest guy out there by any means. I mean, I never graduated high school, for God's sakes.
It doesn't mean squat.
Well, I know it doesn't mean squat.
That doesn't mean a thing.
Actually, I think I'm better off for it because I wasn't indoctrinated. I've always been a non-conformist.
Right, like Reagan said, college is nothing but a bunch of, what did you say, immoral left-wing commie freaks or something?
Yeah, I mean, you go back to Reagan, and he was trying to institute regionalism in California when he was governor. I mean, that's why I was telling Robert, you know, don't put your faith, don't trust in yourself, because you're going to let yourself down. We make wrong decisions. I do it all the time. I'm my own worst enemy, and I know that. So I just put my faith in God, and when he shows me, you know, when I get direction, and I know that probably sounds crazy, and I don't mean that I, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and there's a phrase flashing on the wall and God speaking to me, you know, it doesn't work that way. But these strange little things that you stumble across, and it's not an accident. pay attention.
Yeah, I'm looking at the World Bank now, and under Iran. And I'm looking at projects and operations for Iran. It looks like the last thing they were going to do, well, on their site, says January 22nd, 2009, but they were all dropped. The last thing that's active is the Alborz Integrated Land and Water Management Project.
Okay.
And that was approved in 2005.
Well, let me see. Worldbank.org. There it is.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit it has been a while since I've been on their site. So, and you know, that could be. Data, I'm not sure. Oh, no, wait. It's going to be under projects and operations.
Yeah, it is under projects and operations.
Yeah.
Then you have to go by country, region, then you find Iran. And they dropped five different things. And I see there's only one thing active right now, and that was that Integrated Land and Water Management Project.
I got you. Project maps, there it is. Well, let's, no, it's not in Italy. It's got to be over here. Armenia, Iran, one project it's showing now.
Right. They dropped five others that were approved from January of 2008 to June of 2009. They dropped them all.
Now, you remember the other day I had mentioned something about the Gulf, Persian Gulf internet cable.
Yes.
You remember when that happened?
I honestly don't.
That was September 15th, I believe it was. Or it might have been, well, I don't want to speculate and say it was September 11th. That would be just too damn convenient. But it was in September.
Of this year?
And, no. This was several years ago.
Uh-oh.
Iran had been threatening to open its own oil bourse. Basically a New York mercantile exchange for oil, where they were going to trade oil for anything but the dollar. And of course, in order to open a large trading operation like that, it would be imperative to have internet operation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just when they were scheduled to be launching that undersea cable was damaged and took out all the internet service for most of the Persian Gulf and the Middle East.
Mm.
And they said, well, that was just an accident. Of course, they still launched it on the 17th of that month. But I mean, dude, that's the whole thing over there. It has nothing to do with Israel. It doesn't have to do with Iran getting nuclear weapons. Has to do with bringing everybody into line,
yeah,
and playing the game by the world bankers' rules, the central bank's rules. That's why we got rid of Gaddafi. That's why we got rid of Saddam, because they were a threat to the status quo. First thing, what's the first thing that was announced that happened in Libya once NATO began activities? Go back and read the news stories, because you're going to find that the very first story that was released is that the Allies took control of Libya's central bank 3 days after.
Oh, yeah, they froze the assets. Well, yeah, of course.
Yep, and we had regulators go in, and they took over the central bank for Libya and brought them into the fold.
Isn't that what we did to Iraq and Afghanistan too?
Sure is. Iraq.
Yeah, it's the first thing. Well, you have
bank.
To freeze the money. I mean, we should be freezing. No, our United States. We should be freezing the entire Middle East and say goodnight. But you know the answer to that one.
And I'm trying to remember the story, the connection, and I can't remember who it was now. There's so many things rattling around in my pea brain. There was a connection to Union Oil Company all the way back in, and it may have been related to that Kate and Poland story. There may have been somebody from Union Oil Company that was involved in that whole deal. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't go do the research, it doesn't much matter at this point,
mm-hmm.
but I believe Union Oil Company is what became Unocal. And Unocal is the oil company that Condoleezza Rice and Hamid Karzai both worked for.
And, of course, we know Condoleezza Rice is Council of Foreign Relations, and we know how that works.
And we know who Hamid Karzai is, don't we?
We sure do. That's a buddy in Afghanistan,
isn't it? He's a duly elected president in Afghanistan.
Mm.
And, you know, the project that Unocal was working on when Condi and Hamid both worked for Unocal was running a pipeline from the Baltic regions across Afghanistan.
And also the Caspian Sea.
Right. That was during the Clinton administration while he was playing Hide the Slummy with Monica.
Yeah, and let's not forget the poppy fields, too.
Oh, sure.
You know, the Taliban burned all of them, you know.
Right.
You know
well,
that.
Well, it's a booming business today.
Well, right, cause, and I wonder why that is. Would that have anything to do with us putting military in there?
Now, I'll throw you one more twist in here just for a really good, juicy tidbit on the story. During the Clinton administration, with the whole deal with the Taliban, and the story is out there. It's been a million years since I read it. But allegedly, we flew a C-130 into Afghanistan, and we paid a couple pallets of gold to the Taliban for mm-hmm. protection of the pipeline. Now, I've got a theory, and I could be totally wrong, but I wonder, some of these gold bars that were actually tungsten that turned up over in China a few years ago, I wonder if those are the very same gold bars we paid the Taliban with.
Who knows, Brett, but I got a teaser for you, my friend. And I don't want you looking at this. I want to drop this bomb, unless it becomes mainstream by Friday, which I hope not. Just came across my board now. Some very interesting stuff just came to me about the recently departed U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens. I don't want you looking this up.
He was CIA.
No, something even better. I'm not going to spill the cookies. I'm gonna. Hopefully, nobody will talk about this on BTR. Hopefully, it will not reach Fox News by Friday night, and I'll drop the bombshell in the show.
Awesome.
This is not pretty.
Awesome.
This
is not freaking
pretty.
You know, the guy had some kind of inside info going on, or they wouldn't offed him.
This is not cool. I mean, it just, once again, it just pulls all the ties in, going back to 2001. So I'm just going to hold on to it. Mum's the word. Hopefully this will not go mainstream. Hopefully you will not see it, because I want this to be a bombshell. This is not cool.
I won't even look. I will give you that privilege.
Thank you.
Man, it's been a pleasure talking with you
always,
and having you on the show. Man, you're always an asset to have on, and I always enjoy your insights. So I'm going to get off of here.
Me too. And
I need to go see.
Yep, and tomorrow night I got to spend wife time, so I can't come on till Wednesday night when Linda's on. And then I'm looking forward to seeing you and Linda and maybe Michael Magic on my show Friday night, because, well, it's going to be the end all. I mean, this is it. If they show up, we're going to talk to them. If they don't show up, it's done. You know, this is, I gave the challenge to come in. Whoever doesn't show up Friday night, I'm not going to rehash. I mean, I'm not going to use moving forward, because that's Nazism now, but I'm going forward, you know. So it's a one-shot deal this Friday night. If they've got the courage to step in and go toe-to-toe with their knowledge and what we have, and that's going to be the end of it. That's
you know,
it.
I used to go trolling on some of those sites just to stir them up. I don't even waste my time.
Right. Well, I'm not going on these shows anymore. I'm done. So I've invited them for once and for all to step in and talk to us.
I actually joined the Tea Party Nation long time ago, and I think I lasted about 35 minutes in their chat room before I was banned for life.
Wow.
And all I did was make a statement, slave vote.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I got jumped on, and the next thing you know, the moderator's telling me that I'm advocating armed rebellion, and I tell him, where in the hell did you get that from?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention anything about taking up arms. I just simply said you need to refuse to consent. You're an idiot. Mm-hmm. Slaves vote. Keep voting, slave. See if you vote your way out of it. You know, we've been voting for 235 years. Hasn't fixed the agenda yet.
No, it hasn't. Well, for me, Ron, I'm protest voting only because...
Dude, I understand completely your
You know, the founding fathers, you know, they risked their lives. People died so I could have that right to vote. But I'm not going to desecrate, for me, my opinion, I'm not going to desecrate their memories either by A, you know, like not voting at all, and number two, I'm not going to vote for people that are purposefully ruining what they built. I mean, I'm just not going to do it.
Well, the right to vote was not a constitutional right.
No, I know, but it's just the whole point is that they gave us this opportunity.
Sure, and I think the opportunity for me, I think the opportunity lies in the process before the presidential election, before the Electoral College. I respect totally what your whole reason and ideology, your whole purpose, what you're doing. I respect that. Mm-hmm. What I don't respect is these people that just mimic, well, you know, I'm going to vote for Romney because otherwise you're going to put Obama back. That's just horse manure.
But here's the thing. If you're going to say that, back it up with some statistical analysis.
Give me some kind of something to go on other than just that's your opinion. Do you think so?
And me, I say to myself, let me see if they're right. Well, I do the video. It took me 5 minutes, Ron, to find out that actually Gary Johnson or Ron Paul could actually pull away a lot of Obama's youth vote base.
Yep.
It's just it's amazing. And on that note, I'll see you Wednesday.
God bless, man.
All
have
right,
a good
brother.
Night.
You too, Grandpa.
Spend some time with that missus.
I certainly will.
All right, buddy.
Good night,
God bless.
Friend. You too. Bye-bye.